Well, hello. It is time for the Kenai Conversation. I'm your host this morning, Jay Barrett. We're talking about homes, home building, specifically Rural Caps program, the Soldotna Mutual Self-Help Housing program, which is quite frankly amazing. I've been learning about it here before we went on the air, and I can't wait to share some of these things with you. I've got a couple of experts in the room, one who is actually building a home. She and her husband are helping out, Delana Green, and we have from Rural Cap, Michelle French. Hi, how are you guys today?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm glad you guys found the place okay.
Yeah.
I usually call people after I set them up and say, hey, are you sure you know where the station is? And I forgot to do that yesterday, didn't I?
We figured it out. Might have been late at night, but I figured it out.
Well, you know, the upside is last night you said, well, you know, I might be there just like right at 10. And fortunately, you called it 20 till saying, where are you?
Exactly.
So we're talking about the mutual self-help housing program, which is, I wish had a easier acronym to say. Michelle, why don't you tell us a little bit about the program here to start off, your role in it, how it started maybe, and maybe the essence of it.
Sure. So I am the program manager for the Mutual Self-Help Housing Program here on the Central Kenai Peninsula. And I help to find the building lots within the areas of families are interested in building. I assist, I'm a licensed mortgage loan originator and certified packager for Rural Development's 502 Direct Mortgage Program. So I assist the clients in getting to the point where they can qualify for that 502 mortgage that they need to build the house through our program. And then I also assist in ensuring the clients are meeting all of the program requirements as they build their house, getting in their required hours every week, and making sure they're staying on budget so that those houses get completed on time and on budget. So Mutual Self-Help Housing Program has been around for about 50 years. You can find a program like ours in all 50 of the states. We started, Rural Cap specifically started this program in about 2004 here on the Central Kenai Peninsula. And this is, I believe, our ninth build down here in Soldotna, and we are getting ready to start another build next spring. So what we do, specifically how the program works, is we go and we purchase lots that are going to be financeable by USDA Rural Development, and then we qualify families and individuals for that funding that they need, that mortgage loan, which is their construction loan that converts into a permanent financed loan. And then we get them all closed, and then we start construction. We do usually between 10 and 12 families. This year, we're actually doing 15 houses down in Soldotna. And the families work together as a group to build those homes. It's a 35-hour work week, a commitment for each family. But half of those hours, they can have donated by friends and family, volunteers that come on site and help them construct their homes. And with all of that sweat equity that goes in, that's basically their down payment. So they're not financing all the way up to 100% of the value of their house. They've actually got, you know, $35,000, $40,000 once they move into that house. And they're also learning some incredible skills along the way, you know, construction, finances, budgeting, things like that.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Go ahead, Delaney. You're going to Jump right in.
She pretty much runs the show. I mean, she'll walk you through the whole process from beginning to end, and you know, answer every question. I mean, they got the method down there. they do everything and make it very. It's an overwhelming experience to get a loan. I mean, it's a long process and it takes a lot of work, a lot of taxes. I was I was about, I don't know, 2 weeks postpartum when we first went into the office to start getting work done. And I was having to get all my profit and loss statements ready together and get all my tax paperwork together. And they were very, just, they made it so stressless, like stress-free in a sense. Like they really kind of walked you through it and helped you figure out and understand what you're doing as you're doing it. So mm-hmm. It was very helpful.
Wow. Michelle, you mentioned USDA financing. Does that require that these homes be like outside of city limits?
Oh, no. We can build inside the city. Oh, we can build, you know, anywhere that rural development's service area allows for. So we've built both inside the city and outside within the Kenai Peninsula borough.
Oh, okay. Interest rates lower if they're outside a city limit?
No, the interest rate is the same program wide. So starting August 1st, right, it's going to be at 3.125%. And based on families' income, that interest rate can actually be subsidized down as far as 1%. And that's what the family actually pays on for the interest rate. And they've also got terms that are longer than a traditional mortgage. So 33-year would be the normal, but based on income, they can go as far out as 38-year term. So it makes these mortgage payments so much more affordable for folks.
Oh, wow. What kind of homes are getting built? Three-bedroom, two-bath?
Yes. So we actually have several different house plans that families can choose from based on what they can qualify for income-wise. Has nothing to do with their household size at all, just what they can afford based on the program requirements. So we have a couple of three-bedroom, two-bath houses. One's got a single-car garage, one's got a two-car garage, and then we've got a four-bedroom, two-bath, two-car garage. And also, for larger families, we do have a five-bedroom, two-bath with a two-car garage.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Let me ask about this neighborhood idea. You know, sometimes when you move into a neighborhood, all the time, you don't have a say in who your neighbors are, generally speaking. Here with this program, it kind of looks like you you can join or not join, you know, depending. Is there any sort of, what is the interaction between the potential homeowners before things get finalized and going?
On that.
Okay, go ahead.
So Diana. when we started it, we convinced one of our closest friends to do it with us. And he's living right next door to us. He's actually my husband's best man for his wedding. And so we're kind of convinced that they're maybe digging underground tunnels throughout the program, you know, so that they could easily go back and forth between the houses. But we got a chance at the beginning to like nudge our friends and be like, hey, you should apply for this program. It's so cool. And we get to be neighbors. And we actually got another friend to do it with us. And so that's kind of cool, is if you get into it early enough, if there's enough slots open, you can possibly like nudge some people that you're close to and be like, let's be neighbors, let's do this together. And you get to choose your neighbors essentially in that way. And then the other fun part is you also get to make new friends. We've become pretty close with some other people in the build, some other families in the build that, you know, have kids that are the same age as ours. And that's kind of been a really cool experience because, you know, we've made new friends and they live right down the road. And I was mentioning earlier, there's kind of this lost art of being a neighbor, you know? You don't get to see Wilson over the fence hiding his mouth saying, hidey-ho, neighbor, anymore. And I've lived in the same place for 3 years and I didn't even realize that one of the other ladies in this build is actually my next-door neighbor, you know, from where I'm currently at. And I think that that's kind of cool here, is because even though that's sort of been a lost art, we get to grab onto that once again. And it's actually, I feel like it adds security, not takes it away, to know all of your neighbors and to build this community, you know, and have community block parties maybe again.
Mm-hmm. I'm getting a real post-war baby boom Levittville sort of feel about these complexes. Are they, you know, akin to that, you know, cookie cutter developments for new families, mostly?
I mean, we have several different plans. So not everybody is building the exact same house. And we, right now we're building on 1 acre lot. So it's, you know, there's some nice vegetation that separates the houses. So they don't all look exactly the same. And what's really cool is the families get to choose, you know, color schemes and things like that. So once the paint goes up, it really becomes very much more individualized that way too.
Sure. I wasn't concentrating on the cookie cutter aspect of that.
Sure.
More like planned suburban neighborhoods, you know, like Leavittville, you know, the famous first suburb ever made, like that. You know, it's just...
Maybe in a way, yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
You're not really meeting all of these people beforehand, though.
You actually do get the opportunity. We start as we're populating the group. And once we get everybody in place, they're qualified and ready to close their loan, we start doing pre-construction meetings with all of the families. So they actually do get the opportunity to meet each other in advance of actually starting to construct those homes. So we actually rented a warehouse space during the winter prior to when we started building, and we provided meetings where they learned tool safety and operation, and they actually built a couple of sheds together. So they got used to working together in advance and different construction techniques and things like that. So as soon as the foundations went in, we could hit the ground running.
Wow. What was that like, Alana?
I actually wasn't involved with that very much because we had a newborn at the time. Oh. But that was mostly my husband. And he had fun. He had fun getting to know people. And that's where kind of the friendships started with some of the new neighbors. And that's where we really got a chance to kind of just, yeah, get to know who we're going to be living next to.
Wow. Where's this neighborhood located?
Down East Redoubt.
Oh, okay.
In Soldotna.
All right.
Yeah.
Who's the contractor? Is there, do you have like one general contractor who oversees all these sweat equity warriors?
We do. Our construction supervisor, his name is Michael Adkins, and he is a general contractor with a residential endorsement, so he's gone through all of that training. He doesn't actually construct the houses. He's more like a professor, a teacher, and teaches the families all the required skills that they need to make sure they're building those homes to code. And he oversees, you know, all the purchases, any of the subcontractor labor that's hired out. He coordinates all of that and just makes sure that it's going as planned, and we're going to get all of our inspections come back with flying colors. What's really cool about Michael is he actually built a home through our program. It was our second build, and during that construction build, we needed an assistant to the supervisor, and so he ended up being hired on, and he's just kind of progressed up into the management part of it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you're building, 15 homes in this current build? That's a lot of logistics.
You know,
getting getting lumber and sheetrock and... PVC pipe and
yes.
cupboards and doorknobs all at the right place at the right time, right? Is that what he does?
That's what he does. He's a busy guy.
So every bit of the nail pounding is done by the owners?
By the homeowners. There are some things that we do subcontract out, the more skilled labor, and that's included in their construction loan. So,
well, you're not going to let me do my own electricity.
Mm-mm.
No.
Come on.
Thank goodness.
Unless you're a journeyman electrician and have all your licenses and insurance and bonds and things like that.
So these things are 100% up to code. There's no
absolutely.
No corner cutting.
No.
People shouldn't have to worry about
and
that.
And high in efficiency as well.
Yes.
It's kind of nice.
Oh, really?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Oh, what kind of efficiency extra features do they have?
So they're... We are going for a 5-star, but we generally tip it over to the 5-star plus energy rating, so that helps our families with their energy bills.
We're really looking forward to that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. What kind of steps are you taking to increase the energy efficiency?
The insulation is one of them, high-efficiency windows, Energy Star appliances. This is more of a Michael Atkins question, but we do go through the plans are reviewed in advance by an energy rater, and then they give us tips on things that we need to do in order to get the rate that we're looking for. And then at the end, they go through and make sure they do the blower door test to make sure we get those ratings for the families.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Why is that important, testing each building?
To make sure that they were built appropriately and that they're actually going to sustain that energy efficiency when the families actually move into the house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's a whole lot of testing that once we finish, the actual build, it's about, I don't know, a month long kind of where there's a lot of checklists and things that go off to make sure that these houses are exactly what we signed up for, basically, and that we all did a good job.
So all the final inspections, final appraisals to make sure that the value is there for the families. We are required that the lender requires that these be built exactly as we propose them in the plans and specs at the beginning. And, we have to go through all of the process to get those final inspections to prove that, yes, they were, in fact, built to all of these regulations and codes, and they are exactly as we proposed them at the beginning.
It's like you didn't sneak in an extra bathroom or something.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Right.
Who are the homeowners besides Delana and her husband here? Who's your average?
So the demographic?
Yeah.
Lots of single moms, single dads come through the program, married couples that are just starting out or that maybe are empty nesters and don't need a huge amount of room, or folks that are on really fixed incomes, lots of teachers.
So it's wide.
Yeah, it's...
I imagine that ever since I first heard about this, to me, I mean, I heard about it from an economics professor. He was the one that first told me about this program, 4 years ago, before my husband and I got married and we looked into it, which ironically at the time we're like, oh, I don't think we have enough time to do this. And then we decided to do it when we have a baby. So, but I always thought it's kind of an amazing program, especially for my age group in your 20s, because that's the time when a lot of people are in their very first apartments and their second or third apartment, and you can easily get kind of trapped in a renting trap, where you don't get to actually save up money to buy a house and to qualify for a loan. And that's where I think it's amazing for my age group specifically, but as well as single moms and dads, and really, it can be great for anybody.
Wow. How do they find you, or how do you find them?
We do a lot of radio marketing, and that brings in a lot of folks. We do annually, we have a booth at the Kenai Builders Association Home Show. That brings in a lot of folks. But, I think the biggest... way for us to get new families is by word of mouth, and those home builders that have gone through the program before, they're our greatest advocate, honestly.
Yeah, I agree with that. I heard about it through word of mouth, not really through anything else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Let me pause here and give out our phone number. It's 283-8414. If you have any questions about this home program, the Soldotna Mutual Self-Help Housing Program through Rural Cap, which has been around a while. They've built 69 homes since 2004, and they're working on 15 now, and there's more coming up, and I understand there's a new application period coming up soon?
Absolutely. I'm accepting applications right now for our next phase of construction that we're looking at starting in the spring as soon as weather permits. So, and now is a really wonderful time for folks to come in. If they've got a few credit challenges, they think, oh, there's no way I can be able to qualify for a mortgage. Now's a great time. We don't do the first step isn't the mortgage application. It's a pre-screen, which allows me to take a look at their income, their credit right now, and see if they're able to qualify right now. And if they are, then we go on to the next step, which is the full application for the mortgage loan. But if they need some help with reaching the goal of being able to qualify, I can help them with that too. I do credit counseling, and we've got time right now, so it's a wonderful time to come see me.
What kind of things do people need to have on hand or be prepared to get a hold of?
So to do the pre-screening, all it is filling out a document. And that the first step, I don't need anything from them, just that application. And then from that, we determine, you know, what we might need. If they're ready to go with a full mortgage, then we would start with, we'd get like tax returns and bank statements and pay stubs and things like that. But if we need to work more on some credit challenges, we don't take any of that until I know that they're going to get an approval for that loan.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What range of, what's the question I'm looking for here? Earnings do your applicants make?
It's actually a very wide range. We have folks that are on very fixed Social Security income that are able to qualify. We have folks that, you know, make a significant amount more than that can still qualify. They just have to fit. There's a maximum income limit that's set by USDA, and they've actually just changed that to where it's a lot more people are going to be able to qualify because they're very, they're higher than what they ever used to be. So families with 1 to 4 people actually get to use the 4-person income limit, and families from 5 to 8 get to use the 8-person household income limit. So there's not an individual one for number of people in the household anymore. So,
wow. So, yeah. So seriously, retired people can
absolutely, qualify? Absolutely. You can have owned a house prior. You just can't own a house when you close the loan.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. If you're able to qualify for that mortgage and you can put in the labor contribution, absolutely anybody can do it.
Mm-hmm. So, one of you said that half of the equity hours can be on your behalf.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, but half of them have to be you.
Yes.
So what if you got like a little old lady, you know, she's retired from the post office or library or something, you know, she's got a walker, I don't know.
There are things that the majority of folks are able to do, and we find jobs that are suitable for their ability. We have had folks, though, that are unable to do any of the labor contribution, and at that time, we can actually have that family bring in somebody that acts as their head of household on their behalf, and that's fine. They sign the construction contract and everything, and just like they work as if they were the head of household for that family.
Oh, okay.
So there's ways around that too.
Yeah, we were fortunate enough to have one specific family member that provided the 17 and a half hours for our first full year as a volunteer consistently every week. We didn't have to call them or anything, which was really nice. Now they've moved out of state, and so now I'm going to have to do more, and I'll be getting out there soon probably.
Is there a set number of hours, or is it just until the job's done?
It's 35 hours a week is the total, and that there's every once in a while there's going to be personal days that like the construction manager has to take, and so we might, you know, do reduced hours, or holidays will give us reduced hours, or special weather circumstances may give us reduced hours. So every once in a while, you're going to get maybe a 30-hour week. But for the most part, consistently, it's about 35 hours a week. 17 and a half has to be fulfilled by your family. So that can be me and my husband doing just the 17 and a half or more. And then the rest can be fulfilled by a volunteer in your name. There are a few other ways to get hours, like babysitting. If you have 3 families that have children and you coordinate with them, there has to be 3 involved. Yeah, yep. 3 involved. Then that can count as hours. If you're watching their kids while they go build, that can count as hours. There's some different responsibilities as far as the homeowners, like with the timekeeper and... Mm-hmm. A couple of the other ones, I think, Michelle might know more about
timekeeper, or if you're going to choose, there's a couple of instances where if you're choosing material for your house, like flooring or things, we'll give an hour of labor contribution for things like that. But that 35 hours a week continues throughout the entire construction process. So from the very beginning when they break ground, until they actually, the last little bit is totally completed, that requirement stays throughout the entire build.
It's essentially a full-time job for your family to take on for about 18 months.
I was going to say, it must be a tremendous feeling of accomplishment because it is like a full-time job for a year and a half.
Yeah, and my husband, he works 45, 50 hours a week at work. And so he's putting in an additional 17 and a half to 20 hours to even more now. So he's looking at 70-hour work weeks. So it definitely takes a lot of your time. But never have we looked back and said, this hasn't been worth it. Even, you know, with having a young kiddo that, you know, doesn't get to spend as much time around her dad at the moment, it's still, we know that it's worth it in the end because we're providing a home and we have a lot of, you know, we have that pride in the fact that it was built with, you know, our own two hands, and that's kind of cool too. And we have a lot that we've learned through it. And so, I mean, there's a lot of pluses and not really any regrets that we can name off at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask how old you are?
I'm 26.
26, okay. Yeah. And so you got into this operation when you're 24.
25? Yeah. I'm trying to think. Oh, now I got to do math. my daughter is 19 months old, and we were in the hospital actually when, and she was right after she was born. Like, I don't know, it was day two basically. And I believe it was me that brought it up to him, but he has a different story, and we were both sleep deprived, so neither of us are good witnesses. but we talked about it. We're like, you know, we should look into ROCAP again. And it was just one little sentence. And the next week, I think he needed something to do. He needed a project, and she was kind of glued to me. So he's like, okay, I got paperwork and everything. Let's go over to that office and let's get these things done. And we were bringing her over at like 2-3 weeks old and getting to meet Michelle and
so cool.
Val. Yeah. And now she's 19 months. She's over a year and a half, and we're about to have our second daughter. And so she'll probably be about 2 years by the time we move into this. And so she's kind of been our little marker for how long, you know, when we started this program. And there's a few people that I think started the process earlier than us. But yeah, that's when we started it we looked at it before we got married. We were looking at it, and it was a professor that told me to, you know, go talk to the ladies at Rural Cap, and I never really knew what it was at that time. And so I looked into it. I went in, I talked to Michelle. That was the first time I ever met her. I don't know if she remembers that. Probably had a lot of people. And I filled out the application, but like I said, we kind of were like, you know, this doesn't fit the timeline of when we're going to need our first home. You know, we don't think we have enough time to do it. And again, the irony in that, this program definitely teaches you how to manage your time a lot more efficiently and to use it wisely.
So what's the irony there that it would have taken you much longer to otherwise?
The irony there is we essentially had so much more time on our hands then than we do now as parents. And my husband's moved up in his job. And, you know, so there's so many things. We would have definitely had the time there if we had actually looked for it versus now. You know, it's been a little bit more challenging, but we're making it work. But it's definitely, you know, if you're thinking about this kind of program and you want to have kids in the future and you don't have them yet, do it now. Do it now. It's so worth it.
That's great advice. We're going to take a very quick break here and be back in just a minute or two. You're listening to the Kenai Conversation. We're talking about the Mutual Self-Help Housing Program administered by Rural Cap. We'll be back in just a minute. Thank you. And we're back on the Kenai Conversation. We're talking about the Soldotna Mutual Self-Help Housing Program through Rural Cap. I keep calling it the Soldotna Mutual Self-Help Housing Program. Is that the name of the whole program or just where it's being happening to this year?
Just where it's happening this year. We're just the Mutual Self-Help Housing Program. We do have the ability to do this program throughout the Central Kenai Peninsula. So we've built in Sterling, Kenai, Soldotna. And we're actually looking to bring the program out to Nome.
Ooh.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so we're really, our board of directors is really pushing to get us even more rural and off-road. So we're looking at doing a program out in Nome in 2021.
Imagine what that brings to like the community with, you know, just the value as well. You know, when you build a whole neighborhood of these quality houses, I imagine it adds a lot to the value of the community.
Yeah. Yeah. How many homes did you say were built already?
There have been 69 homes so far, and we've got 15 under construction right now.
Wow. And how many are in the upcoming one? You said you're accepting applications right now?
We're going to be doing two phases of 18. So there'll be 18 units total. So the first group will be 9, and then we'll do a second group of 9.
Wow.
Where's that going to be at?
We have some property off of South Kobuk in Soldotna. It's called the Blazy Tract. But it's sounding like we're going to just hold on to that piece of property for a little while we come up with development costs to put in the roads and the sewers and things like that. We're not going to be able to get that done for spring. So we're actually looking at purchasing some additional 9 additional units. And we're looking at possibly doing a scattered site. So this will be new for us, where we take a look and see kind of what's on the market right now. And as I get families qualified, we go to the MLS, see what lots are available, and they choose the lot they want to build on within the city of Soldotna. Rural Cap purchases that, and then once we've got 9, then we start construction.
Wow, that's really different.
Yeah. Huh. It's more challenging now to find those tracts of land with all of the lots together that are developed and ready to build on without a lot of extra cost to develop the property.
Right, yeah. It didn't occur to me until you just mentioned it. Roads and water and sewer and
yes.
Electricity and sidewalks
that.
and
they
such.
built the road that our house is going to be on, correct? Yeah.
Yep.
The
yeah, so we bring in, you know, putting in like a gravel road and bringing in like the gas and the electric, that's simple stuff. We've been doing that all along. But when you start adding in, you know, you've got the city involved and they're going to want, you know, paved roads with stand-up curbs and gutters and city water and sewer, the costs just start really escalating. So we're going to hold on, like I said, to that Blazy Tract, which is a 22 lot. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to, so that we can get the next group going, we're going to go ahead and acquire some different property. But it will be in the city of Soldotna.
Okay. Now, does the homeowner's mortgage includes all the infrastructure to the curb, right? Like the sewer line. I mean, they got to pay for all
this stuff. So from the lot line to the house is what the loan covers. So all of the extra infrastructure stuff is up to RuralCap to come up with the funds to be able to develop that.
Oh, okay. That's what I was wondering. Is like, you know, the sewer lines down your side road, you know, into the neighborhood.
Right.
So RuralCap takes care of that.
Correct.
Oh, wow. Delana, tell me about the challenges about doing something like this. Maybe especially from your perspective, you're a young self-employed person with a child and another one on the way and a husband who works day and night. What are the challenges beyond those?
The biggest one has been time. My main job the last, you know, 19 months has been to take care of our daughter and our household and my business, which is teaching music lessons out of my house, which is another reason why this is so exciting for us as we get our own house to do that. But my main job was doing that and supporting him. you know, he's working 45, 50 hours a week and at work. And then he's doing that extra amount at RuralCap every week, putting in, you know, 70 hours plus. And he's exhausted. He's been prioritizing sleep over eating most days. We don't get a lot of time to communicate. And so our communication skills, you know, at the beginning were very difficult to find, you know, ways to do that. But we've gotten a little bit more efficient in a lot of ways. And then there's some times where, you know, we've had some mistakes in communication. We're still newly married. I mean, we're only 3 years in. So, you know, there's all the newlywed kind of stuff that you learn as you're living with someone. But then there's this added kind of challenge of time constriction. And so that's been the biggest issue, I think, for us. It's just time and energy. Like I said, he's the one putting in most of the hours. I'm taking care of kind of our home and our family. And so he's exhausted. and that's kind of part of the program. And we knew that. We knew that he would be coming home and prioritizing sleep and rest and refueling to go back into the trenches and work or build. Mm-hmm. And so that's been our probably one of our biggest struggles. The other one at the beginning was, you know, going through all the steps that it takes at the beginning to get all, like, especially since I have my own business, getting all my stuff for tax information to turn into Michelle for the loan and working on the budgets and all the paperwork that you kind of have to do at the beginning. That was a little challenging. But like I said, she makes it a stress-free, you know, environment and really helps you out and gives you ideas. There's a couple roadblocks that we had at the very beginning that she's like, okay, well, this is kind of what needs to happen. And this is how I suggest you do it. This is another way you can do it. There's, you know, she gives you a couple different steps and really helps you through the process. And so those are the biggest challenges and putting in the time, finding the volunteers, which, you know, like I said, we've been fortunate to have a very steady volunteer the last year. But now we're going to have to start like calling in some favors from friends.
And that's hard for people.
Yeah.
Is asking for that help.
It's prideful. It's a lot of pride.
It really is. But volunteers are really the cornerstone of making this work for families who are working full-time jobs and have families. That, you know, getting that extra 17 and a half hours makes it to where it's doable.
We had to sit down with our family at the very beginning and ask for their support. You know, we told them we can't do this without you. Specifically, like our number one volunteer was a family member, and we knew their skill sets, and we asked them to participate, and they did. They went above and beyond, and we sat down with both of our families and said, you know, we're going to need the support to go through this. It's going to be a long process. We're going to need the help with our patience, because that's another part of it, is you do have to be patient with the process, and it's you're working as a team. It's like there is that team building exercise that we had to do in like student council or youth group, where they duct tape you with tape and make you, as a group, and make you like move from one point of the room to the other point of the room together. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of a perfect analogy for this. Is,
it really,
you know,
is.
At the beginning, you guys don't know how to work together, and you sort of learn the process and you get more efficient in moving together to the door. And that's kind of how this feels, is at the beginning, we're still learning how to work together, because everyone has different skill sets in this build. Everyone has different value that they bring to it and to the neighborhood. And It takes a while for us to learn how to fit together as a puzzle. But now, you know, we've become more efficient, and they're building really well. And so there are a lot of challenges, but like I said, they're all worth it in the end. And we know that, and we've continuously reminded ourselves of that. So I think it's helped us keep a positive outlook, even when we're exhausted.
How much time do you get to spend on the
So far, I haven't done anything. Oh. like I said, we had that volunteer, so it made it so that I could be, you know, very blessed to actually stay home with my kiddo. But my husband has been doing the majority of the work. And but now that we don't have that volunteer anymore, I'm going to be starting soon, probably in the next week or so. My husband, we're getting to the point in our house where we're painting, because all the different houses are actually at a different level of, you know, 1 to 10 being finished. Mm-hmm. They all have kind of their different steps that they're in right now. And ours is getting to the point where it might be interior paint soon. And he happens to hate painting. And so he's like, yeah, this is going to be your job, honey. 100%. I ain't doing this.
Wow. You know, I was going to ask about how the different homes are, how RuralCap manages to put up a bunch of homes at the same time, you know, and keep everybody happy and feeling like they're on schedule. That's got to be a juggling act.
It sure is. Yeah. Yeah, it sure is. And then you've got outside factors that go into it where, you know, funding sources may not be there when we need them, or, you know, the weather plays a huge factor. So you get the loans finally closed through USDA, and then all of a sudden, oh my goodness, it's wintertime. And if we try to put foundations in right now, it's going to cost a whole lot. So, you know, you put in as many foundations as you can before winter hits. And then when spring comes again and the weather is where you can get another foundation in without paying those very expensive winter rates, you know, you just go as you can, and then, you know, just manage the families and the houses as it comes along, pretty much.
That's what's happened with ours. Ours, so the first 10 houses, ours was the last of the 10. And I think ours and the one before ours, so 9 and 10, they only got our foundations in right before the winter hit. And so we got to see all the other houses be framed and everything. So it was a little discouraging for a while, but it was awesome to see how fast things were going up, mm-hmm. and how, you know, beautiful these houses were turning out to be. So then it was also exciting because we did see some progress. And
your husband is in there working on those houses.
Yes, yes.
And learning.
Yes. And so by the time we got to ours, you know, everyone's an expert.
Wow. Michelle, how do you deal with folks who, you know, conflict? How do you deal with conflict among homeowners or prospective homeowners?
A lot of it is just, you know, allowing them, having an open door policy where they know they can come in and they can talk to me about anything, and it's not going to be judged in any way. So it's a lot of it is just being a listening ear so they can get all this out of their system, and then working towards, you know, figuring out how are we going to make this right? How are we going to make it better to where everybody's kind of feeling like we're back on track again? And so
does it happen very often?
You know what? Not really. I mean, there's always going to be some bumps in the road. You've got, you know, different personalities working together at the same time. You know, some folks have different ideas of what it means to put in their requirements. Some folks sometimes don't always put in their required hour, you know, so you get other families that are putting in so much extra and these other ones sometimes that aren't kind of pulling their weight. And it's just it's always just, you know, let's keep motivated. Let's, you know, you don't want your other families upset with you. So you, mm-hmm. you know, you really need to be doing what you're supposed to be doing. Don't be worried about what other folks are doing. Just be focused on you and making sure that you're meeting your requirements. And if you're doing that, then the other families aren't going to be upset with you. So,
mm-hmm. So my question for Michelle actually is, so what happens when, you know, families do fall behind on hours?
That's a very good question. We've got an association contract that they sign at the very beginning. So, there's some very strict requirements in place because the sweat equity, their labor requirement is their down payment. So they have to keep up with their hours. If they start falling behind, they have to make those hours up, which means working on top of the required 35 hours, making up those lost hours that they fell behind. And there is a certain point where they can actually be taken out of the association where, and then they would need to sign the house over to another family to take over for them. So it is pretty significant if they're not doing their required labor contribution.
Also, you know, for someone like me, or there's another family that went on maternity leave throughout this build, you can, for timed that you know you're going to be gone, you can work extra and gain extra hours to apply towards that time.
Right. And we request that, you know, during the time that you're going to be gone, you know, have a volunteer that's there working for your family, because that helps the other families also to see, yes, you're still contributing and the build is still progressing, even though you may not be there. So
in your other neighborhoods that you've put up, are there any lasting animosity among neighbors that you've noticed?
Not really. They've been able to overcome that.
That's good. I mean, it'd be a horrible thing.
But there have definitely been some very stressful things that have happened, and it's taken them a while to kind of get over it.
Uh-huh.
So, but you know, in the end, they're going to be neighbors. They're going to have to live next to one another. So, it's in their best interest to kind of resolve that. And they do typically, the groups in the past, you know, I'll run into them still, you know, throughout Soldat and Akina or whatever. And the main theme is that they're just so thankful that they got through it. And even though it was difficult and it was hard with time, and not being able to see their families as much and getting the rest, that it's been totally worth it for them.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We have a couple of friends that have done previous builds, and one of the things that they keep saying is you won't know what to do with the time you have after this. Mm-hmm. You really won't know what to do. You'll have way too much time on your hands. And so my husband and I were like, okay, I'm going to give you a honey-do list of projects that I want done. Like, let's build a bed or a table, you know, just for fun. But also, I mean, I have another family member that bought a roll cap house in one of the first developments. And that one, it's beautiful. They love it. And they get to chat with their neighbors, and they have a good relationship with their neighbors. And so that's kind of also cool, is they kind of stepped in, but there's still this overwhelming feeling of just a neighborhood, even though they weren't a part of the original build because of that foundation of the original build.
Mm-hmm. Delaina, are you from here?
I am.
Mm-hmm. So you've got family and friends here watching you do this.
Yeah.
And they must be pretty excited for you. I mean, you're awful young for building your own house.
Yeah, you know? They are. We kept it off of social media for a while we were building, but we did. We shared it with a ton of our friends, and we've shared the experience. And a lot of people are just, like, really curious about it if they haven't heard about it, especially out-of-state friends and family. But, yeah, it's been really exciting. And from the very beginning of the process to now, everyone's just been very supportive and think how awesome it is for us to do, and especially our families. Especially them and our friends. And it's cool because I'll text them little updates, like when we finally painted the exterior and got to choose our paint, and it didn't turn out the color that we wanted, but it ended up turning out a beautiful color that we loved. So, you know, texting and sharing with them the pictures of the progress and all that has just been really fun, and they've really, really supported it.
Mm-hmm. Michelle, there's another arm or branch of Rural Cap, and I don't know which off the top of my head, was in the news here last week. Some trouble with the state budget. We're all having trouble with the state budget. How's financing for your program?
So for us, we don't use any state funding, so it has not impacted us at all for our program.
Thank the Lord.
How's your federal funding situation looking?
It's fine. We're working on our next grant application for the technical assistance part, which basically assists in the cost for us to run the program. So we're working on that, and that's going to be submitted actually here within the next couple of weeks, and that's going to take us. That'll cover for our next two groups, the total of 18 units. So we're just chugging along just like normal.
I have to say, you just talked about those grant applications. I assume you do those?
Yes.
Yeah, and then you take in all the paperwork from your applicants and
yes.
stuff. I admire you more than you can imagine.
Oh, you should. You really should. She deserves it.
All that paperwork would just make me cross-eyed.
It's a lot.
I tell you what.
But I have really great support staff, too, which is a huge blessing.
That's the secret there. Mm-hmm. What are kind of the specific loan requirements that people would need to bring into you?
So basically, so what the lender is going to look at is they want to look at income. It needs to be stable and continuing, and it needs to be able to support the housing payment along with any other monthly obligations that family's got. And there's debt to income ratios that fall into that part of it. And then they look at creditworthiness, and that's looking at the history of their ability and willingness to pay their monthly obligations on time. So we look at pulling a credit report. We look at past rental history over the last 2 year period. And then we also want to make sure that the property is going to fit with the loan to value ratios, and that's the collateral for the mortgage loan. But we're building and we're meeting all of those requirements. So that kind of piece of it isn't, but basically, income, supporting the housing payment, and creditworthiness is what we're looking at.
And I think you mentioned it before, but just in case people have forgotten like me, homeowners, they own the property the house is on.
Absolutely.
Too, right?
Absolutely. So
it's the whole nine yards.
Yes. So we get them qualified, and right before we start construction, they actually close on their mortgage, and the title to that property is transferred into that family's name. So they own the property throughout the entire build process.
But we don't have to pay anything on it.
Oh, yeah. That's a great point, too. during the construction period, there are no monthly payments. They do not have to pay the interest accrual while they're constructing, and that helps them to continue to be able to support their families. Wow. So it's a very cool part of the 502 Direct is... you do have interest accrual on the funds that we draw to build the house, but that interest actually gets added onto the principal balance at the end, and then it's re-amortized over the remaining term of the loan. So during the whole construction period, they're not making payments on that mortgage.
There's actually, there's not much you pay out of pocket through this whole process.
$35 for credit reports, and then everything else is wrapped into that construction loan for them.
Yeah, we had the tool deposit.
And the tool deposit, right? That's $150.
And then buying our own tools, has kind of helped us too with, but that's been for Christmas stuff, buying some extra tools that might make things a little bit easier. But for out of pocket costs, this has been less than $250, I think, over for 19 months of work.
And the tools are just like your hand tools that you would need, your own hammer, your tape measure, but all of the main power tools and compressors and everything that's actually needed to construct the houses, RuralCap provides that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You mentioned when we were off the air that costs, mortgage payments and all these payments after somebody moves in are oftentimes less than what they're paying in rent before they move in.
Yes, I would say probably 80% of the families that come through see a reduction in their shelter costs.
That's amazing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for us, it was a small increase, but I think that we're going to see a huge decrease in our current electricity bill because of the efficiency of these new places compared to the efficiency of an older apartment building that we're living in or duplex building that we're living in. But it will be a couple $100 increase, but that includes the insurance on the loan and taxes and So that's still not that much when it's your own home, more space, and you're actually putting money into something that you own and not something that you're renting, you know.
Mm-hmm. What's the property tax on one of these three-bedroom, two-bath place in Soldotna?
It's about $1,250 a year, mm-hmm. and that is included in the monthly mortgage payment, along with the hazard insurance premium as well.
Oh, wow.
So they're not having to come up with those out of pocket every year when they come due. It's just collected as they go along.
Ah, terrific.
Yeah.
We're just about out of time. The second half hour just breezed on by. We've been talking about the Mutual Self-Help Housing Program by Rural CAP, the Rural Alaska Community Action Program here in Kenai, Soldotna. They've built 64 homes, 69 homes since 2004, and they're building more, and more are on the way. My guests have been Michelle French and Delana Green. Thank you both very much for coming in.
Thank you.
A pleasure.